This episode of Food Fight, yes, Food Fight is back, is brought to you by Thunder Drain. If you live in the greater Rochester area and are in need of a plumber, text or call Thunder Drain at 585-500-1177. It's Food Fight time.
Welcome, everyone. We are back with Food Fight. We've taken a little break here. This is Chef Joe, and today I have a special guest with me today. Want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Cruz Nieves, and I'm the chef at Rella.
Rella. I know everyone's heard it here in Rochester. It's kind of a new and up-and-coming restaurant. It's been here for a few months. What was the exact opening date, Cruz?
June 7th.
June 7th, man. And, there's a lot of hype around town about it, man. I mean, I've been there. You almost damn near killed me and my business partner. You know, we had, like, so much food. We felt like one of those, like, Thanksgiving turkeys. So tell me a little bit about yourself, man. I know this town kind of is barely starting to get to know who you are. You've kind of been in the background, which I don't know why. You're a super talented person. We've got a long history together. So why don't you tell everyone a little bit, like, where you're from? Where were you born?
I was born in Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, what part?
San Juan.
Okay, very good. You still have family that's there?
No, most of my family already, like, moved somewhere else. You know, like, the last family I had down there was my grandmother, and she lives in Texas now.
Good, man. Looking for the better life.
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, my aunt moved to Texas. She's getting a little bit old, so she's like, hey, move with me. So,
that's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Things are not that well in Puerto Rico, so.
To say the least.
Yeah.
Right. Now, you were born there, and how long did you stay there before you moved to New York?
I stayed in Puerto Rico for 18 years of my life. I never left the island for anything.
Really?
Yeah, I never traveled anywhere or anything. So I completely grew up there. I turned 18, and then a couple months later, I moved to Rochester.
No kidding. Yeah. Now, what made you want to come to Rochester?
My mom was already here.
Your mom was already here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, things weren't that good. And, like, it's like, as I started, like, getting into the restaurant and, like, finding when the good restaurants were, you know, everything, like, always led to New York City.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, like,
makes sense.
Rochester was kind of like a pit stop to, like, for me to find a way to get to New York City.
But you're still here.
But I'm still here.
But we're going to talk about, like, you did make it to New York City.
I did make it there, yeah.
So, like, when you came here at 18, what was your first job, man?
My first job was at Macaroni and Grill.
Okay.
As a dishwasher.
Yep.
I've already had cooking experience before.
Okay.
But not knowing the language, I went to, like, a ESL school for, like, 2 to 3 months. And after I felt a little bit more comfortable talking to people, I was like, I'm going to go out there and get a job. Like, I'm bored.
Yeah.
I need to be doing something, not just, like, this English stuff.
And,
like,
and in case you don't know Cruz, Cruz has enough energy to supply an entire nation to make it through a war for 15 years. The guy has more energy than God.
Probably.
It's crazy. So it's like when he has to unwind and express himself, it's like you better give him some outlets.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started working there. I applied. I went to Henrietta, took the bus down there, and I basically went all the way up to, like, Buffalo Wild Wings, which is, like, 110 Grill or something like that.
Yeah, 110 Grill, yep.
Yeah. So I went up there, and from down there all the way to Olive Garden, I apply in every single restaurant. I apply Carrabba's, Applebee's, like, all those restaurants.
Just trying to get your foot in the door.
Yeah. I was just trying to get, you know, a job. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know the language. I could probably cook better than most of those guys anyways, because I, you know, I was pretty good since I started. It was almost like a natural thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, next, I think the same day, by the time I got home, the manager from Macaroni and Grill called me. And then I think Olive Garden called me. And then I went to Macaroni and Grill first, and, you know, I got hired there. I don't know. Just, like, was a thing, and
yeah.
I started doing dishes there.
How long were you there for, Cruz?
On and off. I was, like, there for a total probably, like, 2 years, I would say.
Yeah. So you started off as a dishwasher.
Dishwasher, yep.
And then what path did you go from there?
So once I started as a dishwasher, that I got kind of, like, familiar with the ingredients and, like, all the names of, like, equipment, and that, like, I felt like I would be able to speak the lingo and the language.
Yeah.
Of the kitchen, so I started looking for a cooking job because I didn't want to do dishes anymore. And I remember I got hired at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Okay.
as a cook. And I'm, you know, it's just like, I just need to have somewhere in my resume that.
Yeah, because as cooks, just in case anyone doesn't know, is that it's super tough to get a job as a cook without experience.
Yep.
So it's like one of those double-edged things. It's like, well, how the hell are you going to get a job as a cook if you can't get experience? And that's what you want to do. It's tough. Even if you go to culinary school, if you don't have any resume of any actual like practical
work in the
kitchen. It is almost.
It's actually worse because, I mean, not to like judge anyone, but if you, you know, if you get a, probably you have that. It's like, if you get a culinary student coming into the door and a non-experienced person, I almost always will go with a non-experienced person because like that culinary like school might have teach you some basic skills, but it's not going to teach you
that
pressure.
Real life experience of being online on in the kitchen.
No,
you're right. Because like for me, the older I've gotten now is I've realized I like to hire the younger kids that are 18, 19, 20 that have the bodies of 18, 19 and 20 year olds that don't have any bad habits. They have the endurance to go 12 hour shifts. They don't complain. They're learning constantly. So they're super excited about life. You tend to get more out of people that feel like they're learning instead of people that have done this for like 15 years and like, I already know this. I've seen this before.
I've seen it,
And they don't want to like learn your way. They're just already set in their ways.
And that's like the worst mentality a cook can have or anything. Like I always, I mean, even when I came back from New York, I took jobs as a line cook. And you know, and I was better than probably the chefs or like, I mean, and for my personal opinion, you know, I'm a big believer, like, I don't want to sound cocky or anything, but I'm a big believer. If I don't think I'm the best, no one else is going to think it.
I mean, I think a lot about your success as a chef has to do with your confidence in your own skill set and your own abilities. You have to believe you're good.
You have to,
Because like, if you don't and you go into any service or any situation without that confidence, it's never going to portray in your food.
No, it's never.
I mean, I'm a super humble person. I always talk very humbly. I am humble.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of confidence in my skills.
But I don't
try to pretend to be somebody I'm not, though, either. That's a big difference,
too. That's the whole thing. You know, you have to stick by what you really believe in and, like, what you really want to do. And then, you know, like, get really good at that.
Sure.
Like, you know.
So I want to go back to this whole macaroni grill thing. So you start off as a dishwasher. Did you do prep there?
No.
You just jumped from there to Wild Wings?
No, so I didn't go to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Okay.
So I basically applied there, got hired, did the whole interview process.
Yep.
And when I go back to work, to like tell my manager, hey, like I'm gonna put my notice in, you know, I want to cook. She's like, well, we were gonna promote you. how much are they paying you? I was like, I was getting paid $8 as a dishwasher, and then I was like, oh, they offer me $8.50. It's like, we'll give you $9. We'll put you on the pizza and the grill station.
Cool.
That was something that I was already very familiar with, something that I really enjoyed doing. Like,
yeah, pizza's like your jam.
Yeah, I love
pizza. So just a little background here in Cruz is that not only does he love pizza, but he loves it so much, he has a tattoo of a slice of pizza on his body.
Yeah, I remember.
Right?
Yeah, we were working were working together when I got the tattoo.
That's really cool, man. So
and
like,
it was like a whole thing of eating pizza for 8 days in a row for every meal.
That's freaking cool.
Before I got the tattoo, because I was like, I need to make sure.
This is what you want to do.
This is what my favorite food.
So now that you got this offer at Macaroni Grill and you did pizzas, right?
Yeah.
So like, what was your thought when that happened? Did you feel like you kind of broke through that wall? Like this is your chance. And like every day that you went in, did you appreciate it? Like it was like your last.
I mean, I learned so much there, you know, like that. Like I might've not learned how to get creative. I might've not learned, you know, good food or
but it put good fundamentals into your skill set, right? Like the corporate, the consistencies, the checklist, the ins and outs, the A's and B's.
Yeah, and like not just that, the paste.
Yeah.
I think that was the job that like probably set me off to like, you know, a pace of like being fast or like some, you know, like getting in that
rhythm. I mean, realistically, back then, I remember, you know, Macaroni Grill was freaking busy, man.
It was busy.
It wasn't like how it is nowadays. No, that shit was popping, dude.
Yeah, we will do like 400 covers on a night, like in nothing. And then there was two saute stations, which, you know, the only place that I ever heard there's a saute station is Rochester.
Yeah.
So people understand this will be like a pasta station.
Yep.
That's what you call it in like a restaurant. It's they call it in Rochester as a saute station, but that was like the busiest. They don't even on the weekends, you needed to have three cooks on that station.
Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah. So you basically have one cook working like the chicken parms, the eggplant parms, like the shitty station.
Yeah.
And because believe it or not, that restaurant never deep fried their chicken parm or eggplant parm.
It was all pan fried.
It was all pan fried.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And like,
that's good to know actually.
Yeah. And they breaded their own chicken. They breaded their own eggplant. There were certain things that were like, but like when it came to like a corporate restaurant, it was almost like a, like a 60-40 when it came to prep. Yeah. Like, they, you know, like, everything.
So they make their own sauces and everything?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. They made, like, I remember they made their marsala sauce and, like, all this stuff. That this guy, that I don't know, he probably might be still there. His name was Tim, and, like, he'll come and, like, prep all everything. Like,
it's funny how every restaurant has that one guy
yeah,
who, like, will knock out, like, your entire prep list for the whole entire business.
Yeah.
And it's just normally one guy who, like, leads the way. Like, yeah. I have a guy, and it's Mario.
Yeah.
And Mario's been with me for years now, and I've worked with him back at Mario's too. And that guy comes in and handles that shit, dude. Like, he'll sometimes prep two restaurants, and it's like one man. It's pretty impressive how, like, some of these guys get their groove and their efficiencies, and, like, next thing you know, they're just taking off and going.
They've been doing that for so long. And then you think about it, if this guy fucking leaves, I got to hire two people.
All day.
All day.
Nope, Mario, if you're listening to this, don't think anything. Bro. Yeah. You're staying. Yeah. Chain your ass to that table. Yeah. You're going nowhere, bro. Yeah. So that's cool, man. So then, you know, what's funny is that I got to get a little history here. So I ran into you when I was working at Mario's as executive sous chef. I had interviewed with you. Because Jimmy had interviewed you, right? And then I had interviewed you, and, like, you came across to me one night, and I took you around the building. We walked, we talked. And I just remember, like, one thing that stood out was your energy and, like, your determination and your motivation. Like, you had so much behind you that I remember was just like, holy shit, are we going to give this kid an opportunity to do everything he wants to do? Yep. So, like, you know how it is now, is that, like, when you hire people and you see that the opportunity that they want or that you can give isn't necessarily what they're looking for entirely. So sometimes, you know, they want more than what you can give. So you gotta be completely honest. You're like, damn, dude, I want to take this kid far, but it's like, I don't have those resources. You know? And I remember doing the interview with you, and you were just like, dude, I'm the best.
Oh, no, but that wasn't like the best that I, like, when I say I'm the best now, that was like worse. Like,
I know, but the funny thing was, so, like, I'm sitting here as a chef and being like, okay, yeah, he's got confidence. Like, there's no lack of confidence with Cruz. You were able to speak well. You had good energy. And I was like, dude, this kid's going to be able to bang, dude. I'm going to put him on the line. He's going to freaking just go for it.
And I didn't.
Dude, you weren't that bad. I'm trying to remember. But it's like, but it's cool, though, because, like, I remember that we were talking, and you were like, yeah, I'm at Macaroni Grill. And I'm like, okay, good. So, like, the volume is there. You know, all these things were there. And, you know, I remember you came on board, and we, you know, it was great, dude. We had a good time.
But something that, like, I took away from Mario's that, like, and that was my biggest issue, like, when I started working there, it was not having the accessibility to go to the walk-in, or, like, that, like, cop everything within, like, you know, I'm really fast, I can get to places really fast, but you're losing efficiency when you have to go downstairs,
dude.
You know, like, you know, like, I used to go downstairs and bring a couple things, and, like, oh fuck, and then
got something else, I gotta go down there,
you know, I gotta go downstairs again, and all of a sudden, like, you're leaving work tired. You're working extra hard because you gotta go downstairs, back upstairs, you know, like,
well, that was also, like, the, you know, we can blame the building and the setup, but at the same time, it was just the organization and the mind, too.
It's
like being overwhelmed and be like, shit, I should have had this up here, but we were very limited on the amount of space we had upstairs, so we were constantly running downstairs to keep on doing. We're wasting, each employee probably wastes at least 30 to 40 minutes a day getting paid just to get product and transfer.
Yeah, I mean, but, I mean, Tuan was the best at that shit.
Dude, he would slide, dude. He was gone.
Fucking awesome. I still remember.
Rest in peace to Tuan.
Yeah, rest in peace. But, like, I remember, dude, I still, dude, that guy taught me, as much as I hated him.
Yeah, and it was a love-hate relationship.
It was a love-hate relationship where we, like, love each other for a little bit, then we didn't talk for a while, and then we'd just get back to the same.
Dude, that's how it is, though, in the business, because you spend a lot of time with each other, so it's very tough. Because it's like, you're like brothers and sisters, man. You fight because you're in such, like, confined areas for such a long period of time. So back to the whole Mario's thing, like, you know, I hired you, I said yes on it, we blessed it, you came on board. What station did you work first, the app station?
The app station, and that was the only station I ever worked
That's right, because then you went to brunch, right?
No, I was always working brunch, but then, after working at Mario's for, like, probably 6 months, while I was at Mario's, I had dinner at Rocco, and I became obsessed with that restaurant.
Yep, and, yeah, I remember.
And I begged, you know, Mark Cupolo for a job until he gave it to me. And the moment he gave it to me, I went to James Dean and it's like, hey, got this job offer. And he looked at me, it's like, if you don't take it, I'm going to fire you, so you take it.
Yeah, it was a good opportunity.
It was, like, a great opportunity, yeah.
And we all knew it. I mean, you had passion to do more than what we could offer at Mario's. Nothing against Mario's, but it just, it was what it was. And there was more things you wanted to learn and do. And, like, the thing about you is you followed your palate.
Yeah.
Like, you had food, you're like, that's the place I want to work, that's the way I want to cook, and I want to learn there. Yeah. And then you did it. We were all sad to see leave,
to me,
it was like, you know, it was like a stepping stone. Like, as any chef sees, like, another cook or whatever, they want to see them succeed. Nobody wants to be held back or hold people back. They want to always promote that. Yeah. So it sucks to lose good people, but at the same time, it's always a good thing.
It's a good thing. You know, when they go and, you know, like, To me, it wasn't much about the food and anything, you know. I think I always had a clear vision of what I wanted to do at the end. Mm-hmm. And it's just, that was like the perfect stepping stone.
Yeah.
You know, like getting to a place where like, you know, you're having a more personal relationship with the owner. When you can ask questions more directly of like, why are we doing this? Sure. You know, like not just a chef, like, you know, being a chef owner, it was my goal.
Yep.
You know, I want to be a chef owner.
It's a totally different situation.
Yeah. I don't want to just be the chef or the owner. You know, I want to be the chef owner, you know, cause that's, and that, you know, having a small restaurant, it was always the goal.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing is like, you know, you go from Macaroni Grill, high volume, went to Mario's. That place was high volume
as well.
So it's like, you kind of lose that intimacy as far as the chef or cook is concerned, with your guests.
Yeah.
And even with your staff and with everything, it's tough because you're so many people.
Yeah.
Like sometimes at Mario's, there'd be like 30 people in one little area working banquets, the restaurant, serving, dishwashing, cooking.
Everything.
So it's like, it's chaotic.
Yeah, it was
You know what chaotic. I mean? It's like a shit show, man. You just don't know what's going on. There's so many people, so
and
many
that little
parts.
Like, you know, line, you know.
So
you
like got, going from that to Rocco's and you get to like actually be like intimate with like the few amount of people that you have there.
Yeah.
You know, the customers. It's like you're not doing a dining room full of 150 people. Like you have a chance to work with different ingredients because the volume is a little bit different.
I mean, the seasonal menu is always like, even at Rocco, they don't change the menu much, but they play with specials a lot, you know.
Yeah.
Like I think the only person at Mario's ever played with specials was you.
Yeah.
You know, the like no one else was kind of like, because everybody, it's not that they didn't want to, but everybody else was so busy doing something else.
Always.
So it's like, it's not always. like, oh, hey, we don't have time. Like, we don't want to make special. No, it was like, I think of like, everybody was always busy. So we were always busy.
It was just a shit show, man.
Yeah.
That restaurant taught me a lot, and I'm very grateful for it.
Oh, yeah.
It's blessed me with a lot of opportunities, a lot of good people and resources, and it taught me a lot. You know, I came from Arizona, man. I was like, you know, I really want to do Italian food. I want to see what this is all about, and, you know, I enjoyed eating it. I hardly eat it anymore, but I mean, I look back and it's like, dude, that place gave me my chops for like high volume, man. That place is crazy.
Even like the place, even the restaurants that you go work at, and like I, you know, I tell this to my brother personally because he experiences that a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you go to a restaurant and you don't like it, you're still gonna learn something. You're gonna learn the things that you don't want to do.
Yeah, and those are equally as powerful as the things that
you
want to
do.
Yeah,
you know, almost even better.
So. You know, looking back, I remember there was a time that I directly remember with you being you back then, like the more inexperienced crews was, what was it, Mother's Day or Father's Day?
Oh, Mother's Day.
When
I remember.
When you're supposed to do like, what, 1,600 artichoke Frenches?
Yeah.
And you did like half the amount. And I was like, and so it was my job to watch
actually,
brunch.
Actually, that was actually Father's Day.
Was it
I
Father's
thought you were
going
to tell another story, which was really funny as well. But yeah, it was Father's Day for that one.
So Cruz decided to do half the amount of artichoke Frenches.
I was like,
we'll be
fine.
Frenches. Yeah.
Like,
he made the decision,
yeah,
not the chef. Not, he was like, no, I'm only doing half.
I was like, Joe, I'm really, this is very tedious. I don't want to do this. I'm going to do half and we'll be good. Trust me. And he looked at me and was like, who the fuck is this guy? But all right, just remember, if we run out, I'm pulling you out of the omelet station and you're going back there and finishing frying the artichokes.
And what happened?
That happened.
And you weren't very happy about it.
Oh yeah, I was like fuck, he was right. You know, like, it was like, fuck, now I have to do this. I could have done it yesterday.
I mean, mind you, this is while 1,200 people are running around. And
yeah, oh crazy. Yeah, yeah. And while you're trying to feed, you know, the masses, you know, and like.
That's all right, man, that's good stories.
The other good story was like, I showed up late for Mother's Day. Not that I went drink. Maybe I went drinking, but it wasn't like I was super hungover or anything. It was just like my alarm didn't go off.
Yeah.
I showed up just in time to open the restaurant. Someone else set up the station. And I remember James Dean just gave me nonstick pans. Because the nonstick pans that I had were the worst.
Yeah.
And that taught me something, because every holiday after that,
you were there early to get
your
pants.
I was the first one there to get my pants. No, I got them brand new pants.
Yep.
But Mario's like, because we did brunch every Sunday, but like normally around the holidays, there will be always like a nice set of pants.
Oh, yeah.
They'll get just
made sure.
Yeah. And then we'll rotate, throw away the old ones. I will always get those brand new
ones. So funny, man. Between the pans and the towels and all the right shit, everyone used to always do that.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it'd take coming a half hour early. You know what I mean? You get all the right shit and you wouldn't have to worry about it.
You
don't have
to,
smiling through service and everyone else is like, goddamn pans.
Struggling,
Where's the towels? Where's this?
Where's everything,
So that's cool, man. So, yeah, so when you left, let's go back here a little bit, because I want to know, like, what you're about here. You left Mario's to go work at Rocco's.
Yep.
And then what did you do at Rocco's? What was your first station you worked
at? So when I worked at Rocco, the first station was Pizza and Grill.
Okay.
So
kind of still in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Stuff that you were familiar with.
Stuff that I'm familiar with. You know, I've done this a million times. I did this at my first job in Puerto Rico as well, which is like, we didn't have a grill, but it was like kind of like you'll do pizzas and a little bit of, you know, like a pan station. Gotcha. There wasn't a grill, so we just like pan sear the meats mm-hmm. and baste them and all that stuff. So I did that. The weekends, you got to have a pizza guy, and then you'll do the grill and all that stuff.
Gotcha.
And, you know.
So how long were you at Rocco's?
I was at Rocco for 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Yeah.
And we still stayed in contact throughout this entire time. We never lost touch with anything.
Yeah, we never lost touch.
Always supporting, too.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, it's always like that because, like, anyone that I've ever worked with or worked with me, whatever, how you want to say it, I've always had, like, true passion for them to succeed and wanting good things for all the people. I never wished ill will on anyone. I always wanted everyone to have, like, that moment where they're like, look what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like to keep in touch with everyone because throughout my career, I've seen that happen like 50 times. And it's awesome to think that like we were on the line one time as line cooks. You know, you're my dishwasher one time when I was a chef. And it's like, now you're the chef. And it's like, it's so cool to watch all these things happen. So 2.5 years at Rocco's. And then what did you decide to do?
Well, after I, you know, I worked at Rocco for that long, being a small kitchen, I always worked the same station.
Mm-hmm.
I learned new things almost, you know, with the specials and all that stuff. But I felt like I mastered the restaurant. I didn't want to leave because I wanted to leave. You know, I love my coworkers. To this day, we still talk about the crew that we had at that time at Rocco. It was me, Edgar, who still is a chef there, which to me is still probably one of the most under... I mean, no one knows who he is. Like, let's put it that way. And this guy's been the chef at Rocco for 10 years. He's been with Mark Cupulo for 18. And
that's something to say, man. 18 years.
18 years, yeah. He's been... He started with Mark as a dishwasher.
Shout out to Edgar, man.
Yeah.
That's freaking an achievement.
Until he started with him at Max Choppa House as a dishwasher. And all of a sudden he made it to the line.
Just worked his ass off, stayed dedicated.
Yeah, and he is the hardest working man in the room.
That's awesome.
He walks into work 10 years later, 11 years later, and he's going to tell you why he's the boss, and he's not going to tell you. He's going to show you.
Yeah, and because that's the best type person.
Yeah, he'll come in and prep, and if you're behind, he'll going to show you that he can prep his stuff, your stuff, and maybe the other person's stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a goal, you know, for him.
So that's cool. So, like, you wanted to do more.
Yeah, I wanted to
like
do more.
You kind of, like, seen what you'd seen there, and you wanted still more. So what was the next move for you? Did you, like, reach out to anybody, or, like, would you just go out looking on the internet? I mean, what was the procedure back then?
So the procedure back there for me being... Italian food being my main passion and what I've done through my entire career to this point.
Yeah.
I wanted to move to Italy. I thought I was like, you know, I wanted to learn the cuisine better. I wanted to learn the culture. So I remember, you know, when I had the idea, I talked to Mark. He's like, hey, Mark, I love working here. I love everything you do. You're such a great boss. Like, I have no complaints about you, but I'm not going to move anywhere in this restaurant. You know,
especially when you got Edgar there. It's been there for 18 years. Yeah, man. You ain't going nowhere.
I'm not going anywhere. You know, so it's like, I'm not going to move anywhere. There's no restaurant in Rochester that I want to work at. Yep. Like, I don't think there's anything in here left for me. Like, I would like to move. Like, if I move to Italy, like, where do you think it will be the best place for me to start and learn and all that stuff? And Mark, you know, looked at me and he always points. It's like, Cruz, don't go to Italy. And I'm like, what? I want to learn Italian food. And it's like, no, I mean, you're very talented and it'll probably suck to lose you, but you got to go to a big city. That's when you're going to learn the most. You know, you have what it takes.
And which was your goal all along.
Yeah.
You know, Rochester was supposed to be a pit stop.
But I have forgotten.
Because,
you know, it was like a goal at the beginning, but, you know, it was one of those things that, like, you know, you're going with the flow.
Oh, so yeah. You lose years quickly just by going with it.
Just going with the flow. Yeah. So I have forgotten about it. And, you know, when he tells me that, it clicked right back up. It's like, God, that was a goal.
Yeah.
He's like, you should go to New York City, San Francisco, or Chicago. You know, that's where the Michelin stars restaurant are. That's where, like, you know, you make a name, you know, or, like, you work for these people. You find the mentors. Like,
yeah.
Basically, it's like, find the mentors. And I remember a little bit after we had the conversation, I think I was reading the book Heat.
Okay.
And then along the lines, I was reading Restaurant Man and, like, basically everything that's, like, surrounded around Del Posto. So I started, like, learning about Del Posto. Del Posto, at the time, was the only Italian restaurant to ever get 4 stars by the New York Times.
Okay.
Was the first Italian restaurant in the country to get a Michelin star.
Yep.
So...
Who was the executive chef at that time?
Mark Lattner.
Okay. Yeah, he's a badass, by the way.
He's a badass. Like...
Yeah.
And the guy
being, and that's the chef that you worked for.
Yeah, that's the chef that I worked. I mean, Melissa was there. I worked for Melissa as well. Melissa, which is the current executive chef, chef owner now. You know.
So you went to Mark Kuplo, you asked him what was going on.
Advice, yep.
And he gave it to you straight. He's like, man, it's going to suck to lose you, but he believed in you and wanted to see you do good. And he recommended you go to a big city, and you figured out that Del Posto was the place that you wanted to go.
Yeah. And then...
did you have any ins with it, or how did that work?
So, Russell...
most people can't just walk into a Michelin star restaurant and get a job.
It's like, get a job, yeah. So...
especially an out-of-towner from not New York City, because New York City experience is totally different than regular.
Oh, man. Yeah. Wait till we get there. It's like, that's when the best, you know? Like, so, around that time, I had met Russell Ferguson. You know, I knew who he was. I met him from previous holidays parties that Mark hosts at his house.
Okay.
Which is, to me, is the best party in Rochester. And so Mark approached me and was like, you know, I was like, hey, Mark, like, I actually approached him and I was like, hey, Mark, like, didn't you mention that, like, Russell Ferguson, he's one of the chefs at Wegmans. I was like, didn't you mention that Russell Ferguson, like, was rooming with Mark Lattner or he has some sort of connection in New York City? He's like, yeah. So I met the guy, Mark put in the word for me, and, you know, we set up a stash.
Okay.
Like, Rocco closes for... 10 days every year.
What is that?
September. This year we did it a little bit early, but normally it's like the Labor Day weekend.
And that just gives everyone a chance to recoup.
Well,
kind of clean up.
Yeah, it's like basically the staff, you know, it's the slowest time of the year, so it's perfect to close, you know. Yeah, so it's like you're not, you know, you're basically actually breaking even if you close.
So then when you closed down, you went down to Del Posto and stage?
Yeah. So basically.
So explain to everyone what a stage is, Cruz, because some people might not understand how this works.
So a stage is basically a cook's interview.
Yep.
And most restaurants in New York City, for what I've experienced, they don't care about your resume. Yeah. No one ever reads it.
Yep.
You know, and
I'm the same way too.
Yeah. And things works over there. Basically the chef is going to send you somewhere and that's the way that you're going to get hired.
Gotcha.
Like, you know, the chefs wants you to, after, you know, everybody's like, you got to move forward.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, it's a working interview. So, you know, chefs believe that over there, at least most of them do, that you can put anything on a piece of paper.
All day.
All day.
All day.
You can be Superman on a piece of paper, but can you fly in person?
Right. You know? Can you walk on water?
No. Can you? No. Okay. So
you ain't shit.
You ain't shit. Yeah. So, you know, I set up a stash over there. My whole goal was to work at Del Posto for the 10 days that I was on vacation.
Gotcha.
So I'm that crazy that I'm going to work on vacation. Yep. While everyone's going on vacation, I'm going to New York City to work.
Yeah.
For free.
Of course.
You know, and to me, it was like, all right, so that couldn't happen because of the laws and all that stuff. So we set it up around three different restaurants. I was supposed to stash at one of David Boulay's restaurants. I was supposed to stash at, what's this other guy? I forgot his name, Rosemary guy. Cesare Casella.
Yeah.
At one of
your brother's favorite.
Yeah. Out of one of his restaurants. And I was supposed to go to Del Posto as well. So it was like split up of being like 2 to 3 days on each restaurant.
Some of the best restaurants too.
Yeah. Well, they're really, really good restaurants. Yeah. And then when I walked into Del Posto, like, remember they told me to show up at 10 in the morning on a Sunday. No one was there. They fucked up.
Oh, man. Come on.
No one showed up until 1.
Really?
And I got to New York City on a Saturday. I took the bus down there, got there, and then I remember going out that same night. And everything closes at 4. So I didn't get home until 5:30.
Then you were back there at 10. Nobody was there until 1.
Until 1.
Oh, shit.
And then I was like, going back home, it's an hour. Or where I was staying,
yep,
it was an hour train ride. And another hour train ride back.
So you're better off just staying there.
So I was better off because I'm going to get 1 hour over there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I basically walked around the Chelsea Market. I walked around the High Line.
And at that moment, were you like, dude, like, I love this place? Or were you like intimidated by it?
Oh, I mean, so intimidated. Because
like, it's so different.
Oh man. Yeah, I walked in into probably like one of the biggest kitchens or the biggest kitchen of any restaurant in New York City. That does not count hotels. I'm talking about just restaurants.
Really?
Like, this kitchen is humongous.
Now, Del Posto is a Mario Batali restaurant, right?
Yeah. Mario's not involved with anything anymore. Okay. He sold his equity of everything. But
That's originally how it got started.
That's
right?
how everything how it gotcha. Got started. You okay. know, I got into the Mario bandwagon because Marcus like a very very Mario person, and that's gotcha. Kind of like I kind of got introduced to it and like started following the guy and like reading about him and all that stuff. So
when you're sitting there at 1 o'clock, or when this somebody finally shows up at 1 o'clock, where you're just like, oh thank God somebody's here, like let's do this.
So I was sitting on the bench in front of the restaurant. There was a bench there. I remember, and I seen all these guys in pictures. I study them.
Yeah,
I read about them. And, you know, I know where they're from. I researched them.
As you should.
As now, you should,
we
yeah.
should give tips here. Even in a place like Rochester, if you go into a restaurant to apply, you should A, know the menu.
Yeah.
B, know the chef. You should definitely know the cuisine or, like, the what the goal is for that restaurant. You know how many times I interview people? I'm like, hey, do you know the menu? Like, oh, I haven't looked at it yet.
Why would you want to work
why
there?
Are you here?
Yeah,
like, why? People that, like, know the menu inside and out that come and sit down and, like, can I please have a job? And I got people that don't have a single clue. So, good. You studied who you know. You're seeing people that, like, you studied. Like, you're kind of seeing them in person now. So, you're probably like, oh, shit. Like, this is actually going down.
So, I was sitting in front, and I remember I see Matt Abdu, who was the chef of the cuisine at the time, crossing the street. Walking by, I'm shedding my pants.
Yeah, he's like a rock star almost to you, right?
Yeah, he was like a rock star. You know, him and Lattner to me were like, shit, you know, these two guys are like badass. You know,
yeah,
like,
of course.
Like when the both of them were there, that's when the restaurant was like super glowing and all that.
At its peak almost, right?
Yeah, you know. For sure. And so I see him, and then after he walks in, I wait. I'm not going to just follow this guy.
You know, like, I was like a puppy dog or something.
Yeah, like I'm going to wait, like. Maybe let him change. I waited like 10 minutes out there. And then I went in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I remember got introduced to Chef Maria. Chef Maria at the time was the chef de partie slash sous chef.
Okay. And yeah, because people don't know what chef de partie is then.
Yeah. I mean, basically, a chef de partie is the person that is kind of like in charge of the station. But she was a sous chef. They call it like junior sous chefs.
Gotcha.
So the Amuse station, the Garmage stations, every station in that restaurant had a sous chef.
Okay, gotcha.
Because it's that
big. It's probably that big. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically you got your, you know, there's multiple sous chefs that, you know, but that's the way that you keep the quality.
Sure.
You know, you trust these people. These people know the standards of the restaurant. They've probably been there for a while. So they, you know.
Yeah.
So they push the two.
And it gives a lot of opportunity for people that are under them, too.
Always,
so they all can see the opportunities to grow and become something.
Yeah, absolutely. And become, you know, and something. So I remember that this guy who spoke no English, he was an Italian guy, like his English was so bad. I got thrown out to work with him. Someone called in that day and someone walked out. This is my first day at Del Posto.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like. Holy shit, what the fuck's happening here? Like, why is people leaving this place? This place is beautiful.
Yep.
I have never in my life walked into a kitchen that clean.
Wow.
So sparkle, like everything. And I'm not talking about like just the kitchen, the people too.
Yeah. Everyone's all well groomed and just.
It's like just white.
Yeah.
Clean. Like.
Well, I mean, they got a Michelin star cruise.
Yeah, I know. But like at the time, I didn't understand why.
Right.
You know, I'm coming from like little restaurants. Wipe down your hands on your apron and like you know work at a red sauce restaurant, finish off with like shit all over you. I'm like, how the fuck are these people? Are they even working?
Right.
Why are their chef coats so white? Like I couldn't get it, you know. But then eventually, you know, you learn and all that stuff. So with all that stuff that happened there that day, so I came back the next day and like they were having staff issues, and I was like, hey, you know, like I have two more stashes set up, but you know, my original plan was to stay here for 9 days. And I still remember Chef Melissa, no, we don't need you. Like, go see everything. Because she's like, she's very like people person, you know, like she wants you to go see more. Gotcha. She's like, one.
She's seen the big picture. She's seen how important it was for you to be able to get the experience at the other places.
At all the places, too. She was like, you know, see more, not just come here to see this. Like, yeah. Like, I by the time I think I've already gotten hired. Mm-hmm. Like, I got hired on the spot there. Like, Matt Abdu looked at me on day two, I think, of my stash. And he's like, do you want a job here? And I'm like, I would love a job here.
Right.
And
right.
He was like, well, I can set you up with a place to stay and everything, you know.
Wow.
We'll hire you right now. We need people. You're doing great. And I looked at him and like, hey, you got to give me a couple months. Number one, I'm on vacation. If you were my employer.
You'd want the same respect.
You want this, you know, you don't want me to call you in the middle of vacation. I'm not coming back. As right. much as this sounds beautiful, like not to pay rent or anything, you know, like you guys are accommodating me, like to be part of the staff. Like I will never do that to him. This guy, the reason why I'm here is this guy. So I'm not going to do that to him.
Yep.
Give me a couple of months, and he's like, I'll give you the time that you need. It will be a pleasure to have you here. As, wow. You know, as
that's a hell of a compliment.
Yeah, I was like, great.
Coming from a kid from Puerto Rico who moved to Rochester and worked at Macaroni Grill, Mario's, and Rocco, and now, like, you're sitting in front of, like, a Michelin star chef saying, hey, listen, we'd love to have you on the team.
Yeah, and
that's
I was...
That's a pretty big accomplishment,
I was
right?
like, I don't... Yeah, I mean, and I was scared shit of everyone in there, you know, man. Yeah. Like, I remember, like, all the cooks were so badass.
Yeah.
You know, I remember this kid, Sean O'Hara. Oh, my God. Never seen anyone make work look effortless.
Really?
Oh, my God. This kid was talented.
Yeah.
Talented. A little bit arrogant, but fuck, was he good at his job.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it takes that, man.
Fuck it, man. He's a sous chef now at the French Laundry.
Oh, so that's just, you know, it's a shitty position. Dude. That's nothing. No big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. Whoever doesn't know who the French Laundry is, it's like probably one of the best restaurants in the world.
They should turn off the podcast and pick something else to listen to.
Yeah. But, you know, that kid... Later on, I found out he's worked at John George, Alinea, and, like, all his badass restaurant. And then he ended up at Del Posto. And that was kind of easy for him.
Yeah. You know? That, kind of almost like a vacation.
It was a vacation for him. Like, and I didn't understand why.
Yeah.
And so I learned what these other restaurants were. Sure. You know, we're talking about from one Michelin star to, like, three Michelin stars restaurant.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. So, you know.
So then you came back, you talked to Mark, obviously told him the good news and bad news same time. Or did you do it immediately or did you wait?
Oh, no, yeah. When I came back, you know, I sat down with Mark. I was like, hey, Mark, I got hired.
Yep.
You know, I need to save some money. So I'm giving myself 3 months. So, you know, once the time gets closer, I'm going to give you a month notice to, like, you know, be able to find someone or, you know, whatever you might need to do. Yeah. So once the time gets closer, I'll let you know when will be the day that I move.
And what do you say? Was he happy for
you? No, he was very happy, and all that stuff. And, you know, he always rooted for me.
That's awesome, man. Sounds like a great guy. He really does.
Yeah, and...
I don't know him too much personally, but, like, I hear about him. I know a lot of stories about him. You talk about him so highly, so that's cool.
Yeah, he was all awesome about it. And it's like, if you need any help, you know, like... And yeah.
So then you went down there, you packed up everything.
Yeah, I
packed up. You moved down there, you went to Del Posto. How long did you work there?
At Del Posto for 2.5 years almost, yeah.
That's pretty big, man.
Yeah, it was so much fun. So I thought I was going to get started like a little bit further on.
Yeah.
And initially it wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to start low, you know, even though like I ended up working the fish station on my stash.
Wow.
Like, they don't let that, like, happen a lot, you know. So I started on the Amuse station, frying station, you know. And, like, that station was all about knife skills.
Yeah.
Like, each station will prepare you to
be, like, an overall.
Overall. Great. Gotcha. So we did a lot of brunoise. There was a lentil soup. They got brunoise.
So explain to everyone what a brunoise is, Cruz.
Brunoise is probably the smallest dice cut you could do. And this were even smaller.
Is it an eighth of an inch by an eighth of an inch? Is that the technical
dimension? That's the technical dimension. But we were doing smaller ones.
Wow.
Yeah. Because that's Mark Ladner.
So like almost like the grain of a rice, just so everyone out there can kind of get a picture.
Yeah.
Of like
and
what
they,
this was like.
And you know, these people, you know, once you don't do it so often, you know, you get really good at it and all that stuff. These people wanted, like, perfectly stuff, you know? Like, I remember the
like
first...
Like, you're trimming the edges, squaring off everything.
Nothing could be...
It had to be a square.
Yeah, it had to be a square.
It couldn't be a rectangle. It couldn't be a diamond. It couldn't be some silly shit that somebody just hit with a weed whacker.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it had to be precise.
I remember walking in to the, you know, the line. You know, what do you guys need? You know, I'm the new guy. So it's like, what do you guys need? It's like, oh, we need brunoise carrots. I'm like, fuck, I can do this. Fucking go downstairs, grab some carrots, peel them. Cut them, do my batonettes and all that stuff. I don't square anything.
Oh, they threw it in the soup, didn't they? in the stock.
This was for soup. But, like, I did it. And then I remember this intern guy, Mansu. No, what's a Mansu? Yeah, it was like it was actually Jillian. Oh, I don't remember who it was. But whatever. Someone walked in and it's like, no. I was like, I had a cup of this thing already. I'm like, I'm fast. I want to show these people how fast I am. I'm like, no. Slow it down, buddy. Like,
yeah.
None of these are the same size. Garbage to the, you know, to the sauces.
Yep, but, that's what happened with mine the first time. I thought I was a badass. And I did I did 4 quarts before they told me it wasn't good enough.
Yeah, so it's like, okay. So they, you know, taught me how to do it and all that stuff. And I'm like, all right.
The thing they teach you too is time management. It's like sometimes like we're always forced to move at a high pace and we give up a little bit of quality there. It's like, no, just take your time. You do it right the first time. We don't spend the money or the time to redo it.
Oh, yeah.
It ends up being faster and more efficient more consistent in the end.
At the end, yeah.
It's like walking the race instead of running the race. Because mm-hmm. you got the people that are going to tire out before crossing that finish line.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what it's about. That's crazy. So keep going here.
Yeah, so, I mean, I worked at Del Posto. I mean, I worked through the entire stations. The only station I didn't work was meat roast. I cooking off meat. It wasn't like, I mean, it was the station that you wanted to work at.
It was. That was like the station everyone like fought for.
I mean, that's the step before sous chef.
Gotcha.
Because, you know, you basically make yourself run the restaurant. So you go, you know, they call it asaji, like the first bites that you get in the restaurant. On a French restaurant, they call it a muse bouche or whatever. Yep. So you work asaji, you work garmo. Then from garmo, you go to entremet. Entremet is the person that cooks the garnishes for the person that's cooking the protein.
Yep.
So you go fish entremet, which is a really, really hard station. So you go from garmo to fish entremet. Fish entremet was hell. Like, there was no ever. I probably worked the station for 3 months, never got it down. And, you know, it was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough time during that station. They moved me to the meat station.
Okay.
As an entremet, and then, you know, pasta, which is like the best station right there. Like, there's no one that you ever talk to there that works pasta, and like, it's not like, yeah, that's the best station. That's my favorite station. Because you know, let's say if you do 200 covers, like everybody's doing 200 covers, but everybody gets two pasta. So you're technically doing 400.
Yeah.
So it's a very fast pace, and it takes a lot of like, you know, skills to like not break your butter sauces. Like you're making sauces a la minute and really fast. The good thing there, it's like you don't have to plate. Your sous chefs do that.
Yep.
You know, because that's the last person that touches the food to like check the quality. So you're just passing pans and all that stuff. So I made my way through the entire stations. The station there was my last station there was fish roast in the morning.
Okay.
It's a one-person station. Should have been a two-person station. Or, as people call that, one and a half.
There you go.
Because, you know, you need it like a little...
Just a little backup here and there during volume.
A little, yeah. You make all your sauces.
Yeah.
Like, you make all your seafood stocks. You make everything. And then, you know, like, the meat person doesn't have to do none of that because we have a saucier.
Yeah.
Saucier is a person that just...
It tends to take more time, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's not like the same as, like, the seafood stocks and everything else.
Yeah. So it's going to take like a long time. So that you have a saucier downstairs, but you, the seafood person, makes all their own stocks and everything. The prep there was insane.
Yeah.
You needed to show up. I remember when I worked at the station, most of the time I showed up at 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I trained the porters. The porters are the people that clean the restaurant at the end of the night. I trained them to turn all my equipment on at 5 a.m.
Really?
So when I got there at, you know, 6, they will, you know, my stoves, my French stoves will be hot.
Yeah.
So before
saves your time.
Yeah. Before I clocked in, this is like raw. Like, I walked into the restaurant. While I'm walking there, you know, I'll listen to music or read a book on the way there.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment that I'm walking to the restaurant, I'm doing my prep list in my head.
Sure.
You know, I'm going insane. Like,
and this is at 6 o'clock in the morning.
This is 6 o'clock.
And what time would service start?
11.
Okay.
But the thing is, like, again, the Vitamix were limited. I needed to do a lot of purees and all that stuff. So, like, I wanted to get everything. And then you got to cook lunch, too. So my goal was able to be done with almost everything before lunch, finish one or two projects away after lunch, and like, or put things away after lunch.
Yeah.
Because if lunch gets busy, you're done, dude. If you're doing, like, 50 covers for lunch, you're done, you know.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So now you were there for 2.5 years. You worked from the bottom to the top almost.
Yeah.
And then what'd you do from there?
Well,
because you made more moves in New York City before you came back up here to Rochester.
Yeah, yeah. So after working there, I became obsessed with, like, I wanted to do French food now.
Okay.
Reason why is because my roommate, who is now the executive chef, Vinny, Vinny is the chef de cuisine, and then Melissa, who is the executive chef, they both had worked at Danielle.
Okay.
So I'm seeing patterns now. You know, I'm studying these people. Like, why are these people so good? You know, where do they get the creativity? Like, mm-hmm. what did they do before here to get where they are? So to me, it was like, I need to work French food.
Sure.
I started at Danielle.
Yep.
And then I did Gramercy Tavern, the Musket Room. The Musket Room, it's like...
Gramercy Tavern, that's a Colicchio restaurant, wasn't it?
No, that's... oh, my God, why am I blanking out? I'm so bad with names. They're a big group. They have the Chaychecks too.
Not sure.
Yeah, they're Gramercy Tavern. It's basically, if you ask a lot of people, basically it's the best restaurant in New York. Basically, like it's just like a, one of those things. Like they have one Michelin star. They have two different kinds of service. They have the tavern, and they also have the fine dining room. So it's like really, it's a really cool place. And then they have a really large kitchen, very big operation as well there. And
Michael Anthony?
Michael Anthony is the chef. Meyer. Danny Meyer. That's right. The Meyer Group, yeah.
Yep. Okay, yep. I just wanted to make sure we had our facts right here.
Yeah, yeah.
So you worked at Daniel's.
I mean, I stashed for one day there.
Okay, stashed.
And it, that was really like weird stash. Like you didn't work through service. You watched service.
Okay.
Basically.
Just observed without just being hands-on.
You do a little bit of prep. You help them doing prep. Mm-hmm. And I remember this girl, I don't know if this was a test or anything, they found the worst baby basil plant ever and gave it to me to pick the best leaves. I think I did okay. I remember she picked like some of them out, and then she like hands me the most beautiful one after I was done with it. It's like, just finish it up with this. Really?
Oh man, the mind games that go.
Yeah,
on, right?
It's like, but that's, yeah, funny. I did that. I did, Gramercy Tavern, the Musket Room, Gabriel Cruther.
Yep.
And I think that was it. That was like the restaurants that I wanted to watch. And then I really.
Gabriel's, that had a Michelin star too, didn't it?
They just earned their second one last year. Second one, wow. Yeah. And that was the reason, like, I always see the vision and I see what's happening around me. I'm very observant. And that was the reason why I wanted to work at Gabriel Cruther, was because. The teamwork there was insane.
It has to be for that level.
It was insane. Like
everyone has to be in sync. Everyone has to be ready to kill.
The kitchen was probably one of the most comfortable kitchens that I ever worked at. Like, mm-hmm. Perfect size. It was kind of like, I would say like 12 cooks.
Okay.
It's like half of what Del Posto was. Like Del Posto was probably like 25, 26 wow. cooks for service.
I didn't realize it was that many cooks.
Yeah.
Half those people were probably working for free.
No. Not anymore. You can't do that anymore over there. The laws are so like strict now that you can't do that anywhere.
It's not like back in the day where people could stage for like 3 months and just work for free. Yeah. And just go in there and help out.
That's not a thing anymore. So I ended up taking the job at Gabriel Cruther of all the restaurants that I staged, and like I thought that was the perfect fit. Reason why? Because there were one Michelin star restaurant and I had, gotten an offer at Danielle already. Every restaurant I ever tried to apply, I got hired basically. It was either me, take it or not. So I took Gabriel Cruther because they had one star. I tasted their food, and their food is like, I was like, this is not one star food. This is two stars.
Yeah, you've seen it.
I seen it. Like, and the only reason why they didn't have two stars is because consistency. You have to be, it's really rare for you to open a restaurant and immediately get 2 to 3 stars. Like, you always get that first one. That's for sure. It's really, you got to be like a big name.
Yeah.
To like, this restaurant is going to be a 2-star restaurant for continuous time. So that was the whole thing. I want to be here when they get 2 stars because that will look amazing in my resume.
Absolutely.
I want to be there. So after working there, I started Muse. Mm-hmm. Then I moved to Garmo and all that stuff. I only lasted there for about 3 months.
What did you do after that?
After that, I went to work with Matt Abdu. He had
a barbecue place. He kind of branched off away from Del Posto.
Yep.
And he started his own thing called, what, the Pig Beach?
The Pig Beach, yeah.
Yeah, I follow him, so it's
it's insane because when they first, it started as a pop-up.
Yep.
Like most restaurants in New York City, it started as a pop-up. So because you create an idea, you want to see if it's going to work. I remember when they first officially opened Pig Beach, I think they were doing Del Posto numbers doing barbecue.
Come on, really?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Like, they were, like, making, like, I think they made, like, $1 million in, like, 6 weeks. Or like,
that's all?
No.
No big deal.
It was, like, a lot of money in 6 weeks. I don't remember. No, that's a lot of money. I know it's a lot of money. It was, like, insane, They were doing 1,200 covers a day.
Wow.
And when you think about it.
And then, for barbecue, you're so limited on the amount of product you have because you initially start off with what you envision you needing.
But that's the whole thing.
And then once you're gone, it's gone. So how the hell do you prep for 1,200 covers? Yeah. I mean, you got to have a smoker the size of, like, a semi.
Oh, they have very few, like multiple smokers there. So, I worked there for a while and then, I think I got very depressed when I was there because,
away from family, different place.
Family, I'm not working at a fine dining restaurant anymore.
Yeah.
I thought I was going backwards. You know, I get into like relationship problems. I get very depressed, you know, break up with my girlfriend. And that was like the thing that tipped the cop. It's like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
So what'd you do? That's when you came back to Rochester?
Yeah. You know,
and what'd you do? Did you call Mark and say, hey, listen, I'm coming back? Or
so
or
basically when I came back.
Because we spoke when you came back.
Yeah.
So I offered you a spot to do like a pop up at my restaurant at Nosh on Sundays when we were closed because you were still about that fine dining. You still wanted to do, you know, modern Italian. And so we sat down. I was like, dude, like, I don't have a lot of opportunity for you, like, as a cook.
As
you
a know, cook,
what the hell is that going to do for you? You know, you could show me everything you've done in New York City and it's just like, whatever. But
it's not going to work here.
Yeah. So it's like, I was like, dude, but you can use my spot to be able to, like, showcase your talents and get your name out there because I believed in you. Yeah. I seen that what, like, you had gone through. I seen that your dedication, your level of dedication. I knew you from the past. And I was like, dude, this is like a kid who, like, went from being like a pasta pizza cook at Macaroni Grill to working at some of the best restaurants in the country. Yeah. And then coming back, it's like, dude, you got to have some way to showcase what you've learned and done.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that time, I was hoping it was going to work, but, you know, things get busy. Things have to happen. Yeah. You took a job at Bronca.
At Bronca, yeah. So when basically before I came back, I made a post on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, I'm coming back to Rochester. Is anyone hiring?
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of people, of course, reach out to me. And, you know, I think I went to Good Luck. Mm-hmm. I remember Good Luck. They did an hour cook test on me. It wasn't like an interview. It's like, we need to do a cook test.
Okay.
You know, set an hour aside, come over, cook something for us. And I remember that was really fun because I look at Martello and I was like, where do you keep your scraps? Like, I'm going to show you, you know, that I can make good food with garbage. So tell me where you keep your scraps and your vegetables. I don't want to use protein. That's easy. Like, I want to make a vegetable dish that it's going to. And I did a really nice dish with, like, prosciutto scraps. Like, I made a prosciutto vinaigrette and, like, you know.
They like it. It's kind of a unique thing because that right there is going to set, like, the spotlight on you as a chef to be like, well, you don't know where my scraps are. You don't want to use, like, a main focus. That's really cool because you're, like, already anticipating the amount of talent that's
going to go. Again, this is, like, one of those things. This is, like, one of those things where, like, you know, I know what the restaurant was all about. Mm-hmm. You know, I know the intentions of a restaurant like Good Luck, you know, where, like, you know, you want to make the most money you can. Sure. And that's probably most restaurants in Rochester, you know.
I mean, most businesses in general.
In general,
The focus, I mean, we all know the thin line on the profit margin of a restaurant is a lot smaller than what people anticipate. All the places are busy. They make a ton of money, but it's like, really, it's like you make nickels, pennies on the dollar if you're lucky.
I tell people that all the time and they're like, what? Like,
yeah.
It's like, no. Like, if you want to get rich, you open a catering business.
Yeah, don't open a restaurant.
Don't open a restaurant, you know. Like, there's not a lot of money in it. Like, people think that you're, like, being rich and all that stuff. But, you know, I did Good Luck. I did, what else did I do? I did Bronca, and I don't remember. I might have done something else, but I ended up taking Bronca's job because that was, like, the only management offer that I got.
Good.
And that's exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't want to, like, not that I didn't want to cook, but, I was in the position that I wanted to lead people. And I wanted to pass the knowledge that I've gotten from New York City. Things at Bronca didn't work out. Ended up working at Nextdoor for a little bit.
Yeah, and they spoke very highly of you. I knew the guys at Nextdoor, and they're like, dude, this guy is a rock star. Like, when you just came in to do your exam and your cooking demo, they were blown away by it.
Yeah, I remember I did, like, I went over a couple minutes on the test, but I was like, I plated two dishes. Because I have done many cook tests before, and I never got to taste it. So for once, I wanted to make two dishes so I could taste it. So I told them, I said, okay, if I do two dishes. So I remember Paul Roman, he's like, you know, I'm going to give you two ingredients and you're going to cook with them. He gets me a whole branzino and artichokes.
Nice. So and right up your wheelhouse.
I was like, dude, you're trying to fuck me? Because that will fuck any cook over.
You
number
think so?
One, not a lot of people know how to turn an artichoke.
Oh, no, that's true.
You know, and that was one of those things that, like, when I worked at Del Posto, I became obsessed with artichokes because I sucked at it. Like, if I suck at something, I'll become obsessed.
Yeah.
I want to get better and better and better.
Of course.
So I was like, you don't even know. And I'm obsessed with fish.
Yeah.
Because fish is like, it's like a thing that no one can cook right.
No, I agree with you on that 100%.
You know, it's like a piece of meat.
Yep.
Anyone can cook it. You know, you overcook a piece of meat for 10, 15, 20 seconds, it's going to be okay. The customer's not going to complain. But fish, the window goes away really quick.
Yep.
And it's dry and it's not good. So, you know, it's like fun. Did that. Went there for about 6 months. Some things went down. Ended up leaving. Actually got fired, which is really hard to get fired from Wegmans.
Good job, Cruz. I'm proud of
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I'm really proud of that one.
Oops.
It
happens.
Yeah, it happens. It's probably the only restaurant I ever gotten fired from, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's probably a turning point in your life, though. It's going to teach you something you probably never do again.
Yeah, and...
Every negative, there's a positive from it, though.
It was stupid. Yeah. I'm not going to talk... I'm not going to get into details.
No, no details are necessary. But, just saying, though, every negative thing that's happened in your life, you can always pull a positive from.
Yeah, it was the best thing that happened to me.
Yeah.
Because it pushed me in, like, a better direction, because, like, I hated that place that much, and this is just, like, a personal... Like, working there was not my thing.
Gotcha.
Like, it was just, like, something that I didn't want to do, so I was going to work not happy. Yeah. I was losing myself there.
Okay.
So, like, not... That's the
and great... sometimes it happens of just not being the right fit for the job well, the at the job, time.
It's not the place. The place...
Well, not only that, but if you would have done that 10 years ago, you could have been obsessed by it.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe because it just wasn't the right time.
It wasn't the right time. Yeah, yeah. That's a beautiful kitchen. Yeah. Probably one of the cleanest kitchens in Rochester.
It's a place that I go to eat whenever I have a chance,
yeah,
to be honest.
Their sushi's great, you know, and, like, you learn a lot there because they have the money to pay for ingredients.
Yeah, they got the Wegmans money.
Yeah. So after that, I ended up helping Tony, Max Eastman, for the Jazz Fest.
Okay.
And then after that, Mark needed a host.
Yeah.
And then I never worked front of the house. I'm about to jump in a venture when I have to do front of the house and back of the house at the same time.
Yeah.
So that was the perfect fit for me to, one, get to know Mark customers, people get to know me, and, you know, kind of like promote the restaurant before it even
And now opened. We're talking about hosting at Rocco's that led into Rella.
Yeah.
Got you.
So the restaurant was already in the talks. The restaurant, you know, like you'd probably know, it takes longer than what you think.
Yeah, you say 6 months, it's going to be a year.
Yeah, it's going to be a year. So basically, it was like about a year.
Yep.
And, you know, I worked there for, you know, hosted. I basically did everything. I could have done. The only thing I'd never done is like bartending. Mm-hmm. Not familiar with like making cocktails or anything.
Drinking them maybe, but not making them.
Right. Not even drinking. I'm more like a wine person, beer person. Like, I like my cocktail, but like.
So, like, you went back to Mark as a host at Rocco's to learn the front of the house because you knew there was more things in the work with him in the future.
Well, no, we had already talked. The reason why I left Branca is because we had talked about this restaurant already.
Gotcha. So this is in the background for a while.
For a while, yeah. Gotcha. We basically, Mark approached me when I came back. Mark was one of the people. I talked to you. I talked to Mark.
Yep.
Mark was one of the people that basically when I came back, he's like, he was already looking at the spot.
Gotcha.
And he was like, hey, you know, like I've been wanting to do a pizzeria. And as you said earlier, as much as I love pizza and as much as I making pizza, it's not what I want to do. It's not going to outshow.
And not for nothing, man. Rochester's got enough pizza places, bro.
Yeah, it does. So it's like, when he told me that, I was like, Mark, that's not something I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, good luck. And then he changed his idea. It's like, what do you think about doing like a seafood bar?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, now you're talking my language.
So what does Rella mean? Do you know? Is there like a meaning of it?
There's a meaning.
What does Rella mean?
Rella, it's short for Cinderella.
Okay.
Mark's wife, Cindy.
Okay.
Cinderella. And then the whole name came from the bartender at Rocco. So, you know, he started calling it Cinderella, and then he started calling it Rella.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So that's the whole meaning of it.
Yeah, that's the whole meaning.
That's pretty cool, man.
And I was like, you know, before we even sat down and like, I remember one day I showed up to talk to Mark, and he's like, I think I got the name of the restaurant. And he told me Rella. And I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
I didn't even like... Ask him why.
One word, it's short. It just makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he goes, and, you know, screws Rocco and Rella. You know, those two things sounds really good. And then he explained me why, and I was I like it.
So not to, like, speed things up too much here, but, like, I really want to get to focus on where you're at now and how Rella is now a way for you guys to kind of express who you are as cooks today.
Yeah.
In case anyone has not been to Rella yet, I highly suggest you going. What's the exact address?
181 Monroe Avenue.
Okay, so it's on the corner of like almost near Marshall, right?
Yeah, it's the corner of Marshall and Monroe.
It's like a corner wedge building. It's super cool. It's very unique because it's like a bar top that you go sit down at, and your cooks are your servers, your waitress, your waiters, your hosts, your everything. They're like your personal entertainment for the entire evening and throughout the entire experience of the restaurant. And during the summertime I went, when you guys kind of first opened, I gave you guys like a month or two before I went in there. And it was full, and it's really cool because, like, you get to share this really unique, intimate, like, experience. Like, you don't get a chance to really, I mean, even in open kitchens, like, you see the cooks cooking and the chefs calling and doing all these things, but you don't get to experience it and see the talent itself in such an intimate way where it's, like, literally you're, like, a foot away, you're watching them prepare the dish.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. You watch them season it. You're watching them tasting it. You're watching them like just prepare it. And it's like, even as a chef, like I found that to be highly entertaining.
It is very.
I see this shit every day. Yeah. It's what I do, but not on that level. And it's like to sit there and have somebody like, it's almost like watching somebody make you sushi without making you sushi.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that cool experience where you get to really enjoy it. You see the ingredients. You're just like, damn, you get to smell it.
Yeah.
And it's a super unique, cool, fun place. And I was really blown away by the concept alone, especially knowing that you guys had changed it and what it ended up being. It's like, dude, that, there's no place in Rochester like that.
No.
There's not a single place. It only has how many seats, Cruz?
16.
16 seats. Yep. So literally, if you're not one of those 16 people in the beginning, you're waiting for a seat. It's just how it works. Yep. It's well worth it when you're there, though, because you're paid attention to, like, you're, like, literally a very VIP, like a very important person. Yep. Every person there gets treated with the same amount of attention and respect, and it's a super cool thing.
Yeah.
Super proud of you.
Thank you.
I mean, for what you've done, where you've come from, where you're going, it's very cool. I like seeing when I open my like social media feed and I see all the newspapers covering Cruz's face on there for, you know, Mark and him. Mm-hmm. It's like a freaking, dude, we worked together at Mario's. Yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
You know what I mean? Like, it's very cool. Like at Mario's, like my chef at Nosh is RJ. Worked with him at Mario's. My general manager at Old Pueblo Grill is Terry. Worked with him at Mario's. It's like Twan was doing great jobs before he passed away in South Carolina. He had building five empire. Different businesses. Yeah. It's like a lot of people, you know, Justin Chapman's over at Genesee Valley. Like all these people are doing such great things, but it's always good to see when people are succeeding at like life.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's good to see that you went to New York City, you got some different chops, you got some more ambition, you came back to Rochester. And you're making an impact and you're getting exposure for it. You deserve it. You're a great person, a great cook. And I believe that you're going to have more to bring to this city in the future. And I'm super excited, man. I think that everyone should go and support you. And I think it's great. So give me like a quick synopsis of like Rella really quick. Like what's your main focus? Where do you see it going? You know, and what's it like real quick?
Well, the main focus since we opened the doors, it was to do good food, good service, nothing else. You know, there's a lot of people out there that do really great social media. Yep. I run the social media. I barely post in it because I'm always hands-on doing other things.
Yeah.
You know, like there's people out there that are really good at promoting the restaurant. We don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like.
I mean, it's one of the things that like we're good at. I'm not going to lie. Nosh and Old Pueblo Grill.
Yeah, like, you guys.
We hammer you guys.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, yeah. I feel bad for you. If you like or like follow us, you're going to get. 3 times a week, you're going to get postings and
different things. Great pictures and all that. The pictures that I've taken, it's because the pictures that I post is either the food bloggers that come in and take pictures and send them to me, and then I'd repost them, or, you know, I quickly, like, I mostly post me prepping. You're
focusing on making good food and doing good service.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this shit looks cool. Boop, picture. Or boomerang. Yeah. Or I'm grilling this. Or like this, come and check this out. But, you know, the main focus is to give people good food, a good service. And nothing formal. I don't ever want people to like feel like, I tell people, basically you come to this restaurant and hang out with us.
Yep.
Have a good meal. We're going to chit chat, you know, we're going to talk everything, Netflix, whatever we want to talk about, you know, whatever's happening. You know, I tell people all the time, this is a curse all you want. I curse a lot, you know, and that's who I am. And like, you know, I try to keep it as minimal as I can, but that's
still
who I
being
am.
Who you are.
It's still being, I'm not going to go out there and like, talk all professional. No, I'm going to talk.
Like how you would normally talk.
Like how
normally talk. Because you're in your place. It's like when you're more comfortable with who you are and what you're doing, you're going to put out better food, better service because you're being you instead of trying to pretend to be somebody you're not.
Yeah. I mean, the energy in there, it's like really high because of my energy. So, you know, it's like one of those things, you know, like you're just going to come in and, you know.
Now you guys support local purveyors for food. What's your goal with that?
Mark takes trips to the market. Cool. On Thursdays, Saturdays, and, you know, I get produce from that. You know, we get our seafood from Conley, which is a purveyor of Boston. They have great, great quality of fish. The fun part, Mark does all the shopping.
That's cool.
I don't do none of the shopping. I do the creativity part. Mark doesn't touch the food. If he wants to use something, it's like, I bought this, I want you to use it some way.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
so like, it's a good partnership then.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really cool.
And he lets me go nuts. He doesn't question my things or anything like that.
He trusts you. Obviously, he trusts you. Yeah. So he's empowering you with the ability to be creative. He's looking for the best ingredients to give you.
Yeah.
He's basically giving you the paint. You're like the painter and the canvas.
Exactly.
That's very cool. You know, I think it's great that you guys make such a good team with that. I just want to say congratulations to you guys. You guys got nominated for City's Best for Best New Restaurant.
Yeah.
Mark got nominated for being
best chef.
Best chef in the city.
Yeah.
It's such a good thing to see.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is I'm in the same category.
Yeah, well, you are in those too. Yeah.
And it's really cool though, because it's like you want to be surrounded by people you love and respect. And I'm nothing more proud than I am is being nominated with some of the best chefs in the city. And I think it's a cool thing. And it shows the level of work that you guys have brought.
Who's the fourth one? I know it's you, Mark, Martello.
Steve from Radio Social.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, super excited, man. Cruz, I can't thank you enough for sharing your story. Obviously, we got tons more shit to talk about, but we'll save it for another
part
day.
Part two, maybe.
Hell yeah, absolutely. But until then, man, I wish you nothing but good luck.
Thank you so much.
You and Mark and your whole team, I think you guys are doing a kick-ass job, and very thankful to have you guys in the city and know you as a friend. So,
yeah,
I appreciate your time, my man.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity and having me here. It was fun.
Absolutely, man. There's a lot of things that people need to know about, a lot of people in this town. You know, it's like nobody knew any of that shit about you, right? I learned a lot today.
Yeah.
I've known you for 7 years.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, that should wrap it up, guys. Thank you so much for listening in to Food Fight, and talk to you guys next week.